This is Forum. I'm John Michaels, Public Affairs Radio Director. We're going to be speaking with Lori Montes, who's Suicide and Crisis Director at the Helpline Center, and Janine Harris, who's Volunteer Helpline Center. You lost your daughter, Nikki, to suicide. How long? That was in 2005, June 15th. What school did Nikki go to?
Washington High School. Whittier Washington High School. And she was thinking about enrolling at USD.
Was she a cheerleader or anything like that? Or?
Mm-hmm. She was in dance and high steppers and Spanish club and lots of activities.
Well, I ask because I remember, and maybe it was a little bit longer ago, that there was a cheerleader and a student at Roosevelt that had just gotten back from looking at some of the campuses of the colleges that she was going to go to and basically asked her dad if he could, you know, talk. And he was on the phone, says, well, I'll talk to you in just a minute. And it was too late by the time he came back to her room. Nobody figured out why it didn't seem to be any warning, but that affected the whole school.
Oh, sure.
They were still crying at their homecoming the next fall. Mm-hmm. In tears because of, we were just talking before we started the program and how many people it affects. And Janine, you know, Nikki, you know, affects the immediate family, but not just the immediate family, but everybody that knew her.
Sure. And you're talking classmates and her coworkers and other friends in the community and even others that have gone through this and church members and a lifelong people that grew up with you.
Well, 2005, that's about 9 years ago, but it doesn't go away, does it?
No. Sometimes it feels like yesterday.
Did you have any warnings at all, or any looking in afterwards, you kind of say, what if this and what if that, I'm sure, but...
Yeah, you always retrace those steps, and you have to, in your journey of healing, you have to be really careful to not let those overpower what should have, would have, could have been, because that can be very painful for you. And I've learned in the process of this journey that our family is on that healing doesn't mean forgetting. And I struggled with that for a long time. Because I used to think, well, there's just no way, you know, that I can heal from this because I won't forget. And that's not what it is at all. Healing is hanging on to those good memories and the love that you had for the person that you lost.
Was Nikki an only child then?
No, she had an older brother, mm-hmm. Christopher. Uh-huh. And I think he still has some struggles with this today. Like I said, it's something that... it's nothing to get over. It's something that you learn to live with, and hopefully you use the resources in the community like the Helpline Center has done for our family and get that support and love that you need.
That's what you're doing as a volunteer at the Helpline Center. Teenage suicide has been for a long time. It's measured as an epidemic. And if we thought there was an epidemic of the flu in town, if we thought there was an epidemic of cold sores in town, we would be talking about it. But suicide is epidemic in teenage kids, not just in Sioux Falls, I think pretty much around the country. But Lori, I think the Suicide and Crisis Helpline Center, this is one of the things you've been doing since it first started.
Yes, I think suicide awareness and as well as kind of some of the what we call postvention services, helping people who've lost a loved one to suicide, have been around for many years as part of our program.
Well, the Helpline Center is 24 hours, 7 days a week, and you're there to answer the phone, and you're trained. You train people who answer their phones, but they can also put that person in need directly too if they need a psychiatrist or help in that sense. You can hook them up with that any time of the day.
Sure. You know, our goal is to, you know, provide the support that we can through our crisis line. And we also have a crisis texting program for high school students that we started in 2012. So that's another way that they can reach out in a way that maybe they're more comfortable in using. But they can call 24/7, and our trained staff will take those phone calls and do what they can to help the person, and then, yeah, assess what needs to happen in addition to help that person be safe and, you know, to meet whatever needs that they may have.
Is there any time of the week that you get more calls? Some people might think it would be Saturday night or early, you know. It doesn't matter what day it is, does it?
Not necessarily. You know, nationally, they say that Monday is the day of the week in which there's the highest number of deaths by suicide. I don't know if we've seen that. I guess I've never looked at those numbers. But the calls really do fluctuate a lot. You know, we get certainly some overnight, but we get people that call at 8 a.m. who are thinking about suicide as well.
How many suicide calls did you get last year?
Last year, I think we had just over 1,300 calls related to suicide.
1,300, that's averages about three a day.
Right.
Or four.
Right.
Janine, I guess, first of all, parents aren't really built, or it's not in your brain, the loss of a child. It doesn't seem to fit right, does it?
No, it doesn't. That's always been a struggle. In fact, after I lost Nikki, I had the hardest time. I didn't understand why God wouldn't take me, you know, and let her have her life, and to be able to grow up and go to college and get married and have babies, but you know, it just wasn't meant to be for some reason. And you know, you look, one thing I've always said, if you ever have any thoughts, you know, sometimes we worry about asking, are you okay? Or what's going on, and never ever be afraid to ask that question. It might be just the one thing that will make somebody open up. And you know, I guess I wish we would have done that a little more. You said something earlier about signs or struggles, and you know, Nikki was going through a lot of changes in her life, but really didn't see anything drastic. She had been in a relationship with this young man, and it had turned kind of bad, and that really took her downhill.
One thing about a teenager is their hormones and their extremes. I think everyone's heard a teenager say, I'm going to kill myself, but you kind of take it with a grain of salt, because I think we've all said that at one time or another, just to kind of get our way. Or to manipulate, or to, you know, the frustration of the problem that you might be in. But yes, you do have to think about that if anybody says that at any time.
Oh, take it very seriously. Yeah. Absolutely. That isn't something, you know, oh, well, they're just going through blah, blah. It's, no, you take that comment very seriously and act upon it.
Now, Lori and Janine, can people intercede? In other words, it's not the person that is talking about suicide calling you, but maybe a friend of theirs or a parent or somebody else that is concerned about them. How do you deal with that then when the actual person isn't the one calling you?
Sure, and that happens a fair amount of time. In particular, I think anymore, we're seeing people who've seen postings on Facebook or other social media sites that somebody has said something that has them thinking perhaps that person is thinking about suicide, or maybe they have even made, you know, an overt statement and said, I'm thinking about killing myself. And so, you know, we take the information from them and do everything we can to help that person in whatever ways needed, and including, if we need to, we'll do an outreach call to that person to, you know, have a conversation with them ourselves and assess what's going on.
And the young people I've worked with in the years following Nikki's death, I've said, you know, if you need to say something, say something. If you need to make a call, make a call. That is what it is, being that friend. Don't worry that they might be mad at you for a little bit or mm-hmm. upset, because it's going to be better in the end if you help them save, you know, if you help save a life or to get them in the direction to get the help they need.
You mentioned earlier, Janine, the fact that Nikki didn't, you know, grow up and get married and have babies. And I think what you're describing is really suicide is, for you, it's the death of a dream. What you thought your future, you know, you probably say, well, I was looking forward to grandchildren and so on and so forth. that death of that dream is just as serious as the loss of your child.
Sure. It's and I have to go back and thank the people at the helpline and the support system that I've had in the community to get me through times like that.
The aspect is, you know, her birthday, Christmas, what she is missing, or, you know, if we could just get to the point of people out there listening, think about the things that you miss if you take that shortcut or you think is the easiest way out. It's not the easiest way out. Maybe you think it is for you just to swallow maybe, you know, a container full of pills or something like that and end your life, but let's talk again about how it affects your families and the people around you, because most people don't realize it's a very selfish thing that they're doing.
I think that's one of those myths that we try and dispel, that's still out there, that people think that it is a selfish act. And I always just try and educate people that, boy, somebody who's struggling, you know, as you would have to be to think about ending your life, that they're in such a dark place, a deep, dark place, that they honestly, if they are thinking about anybody else, they're thinking that I'm going to make this easier for my loved one, that, you know, I'm such a burden, and, you know, they may be sad for a while, but then things will, you know, go on as normal. So, you know, I don't think it's that they're selfish. I think that, you know, it's just that they are sick, right, and need some kind of help in some way.
And I agree with you, Lori, and I don't think, really, to them, it's not selfish. They're in so much pain, and they're in such a dark place. It's almost like a tunnel vision that they can't see past this, that they can't see that, well, maybe if I did this or hung onto this or made a call or got some help, it's that's what the focus is. So, and they also think that, you know, if I did this, you know, it's going to be good for my family, or it's my friends will understand or whatever. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
They say they'll be better off if I'm not here,
right,
burdening them or whichever. And I bring this up now, if we can dispel another myth, is that some people take it very seriously, and especially, you know, in the older, old school, is that it's an unforgivable sin. And but yet, if you can ask any pastor or any Monsignor or priest or anybody, they'll always come back and say that person really was not thinking right or had a mental problem at that particular time, and so they don't talk about that anymore.
I think, and Nikki was raised Catholic, and that was one of my struggles, and I talked to a priest about that. And I think the Catholic Church has really changed their view from from years and years ago, thank goodness, because you get on the lines of mental health and mental mm-hmm. illness, and that's something that just has to be understood. It's not, you know, and you think of, because God gave us life, why would we want to take that away? But there's also some things, I believe, going on with that person, chemically, physically, mm-hmm. emotionally, that we don't have answers to. And so I believe the way that he, you know, I had a great conversation with a priest in Sioux Falls, and it was very comforting to know that they've changed their view and opinion.
I bring that up because some people, you know, like I say, if they read the internet, they might come across that, and we want to talk about all the things that are issues with this. Suicide isn't going to go all the way tomorrow. There's not a pill you can take to fix it. Nikki was how old?
20.
And that loss of a love, especially your first real love, that first breakup, you think it's the end of the world, that you're never going to love again, that no one else can ever take that place. That happens in high school and that age. Again, they don't realize that, yes, you can love again. There'll be other people. But you can't tell them that. They think that was it.
Right. And you know, like I, after that relationship, and it was just a matter of days when Nikki killed herself, but, you know, it's, we all didn't realize how much pain she was in, and of course didn't reach out and didn't share with what she was going through. You know, she had plans of starting college, and she was kind of tired. She was doing a job, but she wanted to do something else more productive in her life, and so she had, you know, a lot of good things to live for.
Can I ask how she died? Was it an overdose or
gunshot?
That takes a lot to do, I would imagine. Sometimes people may take too many pills, and that could be an accidental suicide, an overdose, or whichever. But that, I suppose, did it bring your family closer together, or sometimes, many times, it tears it apart?
Sure. Well, I think, I mean, you know, she never really grew up around guns, and, you know, it was, I mean, the act itself, I guess, was just a real shock to all of us. But I would say yes, our family was drawn closer together. You learn to appreciate each other more and be thankful that they're in your life, and you maybe have a stronger sense to watch out for each other.
Did she do this at home, or?
Pardon?
Did she?
No, it was far away, across the state, so. So we didn't, in fact, I first thought that she was missing because I couldn't get a hold of her, and we had contacted the police, and so it was a day or two before we found out.
Now, sometimes the police won't do anything if it's less than 24 hours, or did you have to go through that?
The officials were very helpful, because we were worried about this relationship that she was in that became a little abusive. And so actually they were very responsive and very helpful. The problem was that, of course, it was across the state, on the other end of the state. And so it just took a while for, you know, the word to get back to us. But they were very helpful.
To me, that seems like it makes it easier than to walk in her bedroom and find her yourself. That would be even harder, I would imagine.
Well, there's so many things, John, that, you know, that could make this worse or make it better. I mean, it's got to be just heartbreaking, overwhelming to be the one to find your child, and it happens to many people. But I have to go back to the Helpline Center and other resources in our community that help us get through this, and the support programs that they have. They're just, I just can't say enough about them, and they're very beneficial. And I feel really proud to be able to be a volunteer at the Helpline Center. There's some things with suicide prevention that I can't do. I just can't do. But there's some things that I can do. So, you know, by the strength of God and my family and others, you know, I can try to help those with the strengths I have.
Washington High School had a suicide that affected them quite a bit a few years back. And the kids got together and said, what can we do, you know, because it was affecting everybody in the school. And they came up with a pretty good idea. They were handing out cards that said, you know, when somebody says, how are you, to look them in the eye and really mean it. So often we, you know, simply pass by and say, how are you, and really don't have it. You're not saying that when you say it. But for them, they said, well, really mean it and ask, how are you, and look them in the eye. And to me, that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure that that's, you know, going by over the years, that type of thing. But to, you know, when you meet somebody, to really ask how they really are. Because these kids thought, you know, that might be some way they could catch somebody that is having thoughts of suicide. But yet, if they're wanting or planning to commit suicide, how do you get them into a support group? How do you, you know, get them to make that turn?
I think, like Janine mentioned, you know, first of all, you have to have a comfort level with asking that question, right? So if you're noticing anything different, any changes, that you want to ask that person what's going on. and ask them directly if they're thinking about suicide. Are they thinking about killing themselves? And opening the door to have that conversation. And then figuring out, you know, what exactly is going on based on their story and what, you know, safety net you can kind of get into place to help them. You know, whether that is a support group or seeing a counselor or talking to their pastor or, you know, any number of things that a person might do to try to feel better.
And like I say, you can directly connect people with professional people if they need to at any time, too. Tell us about your suicide helpline. How many people are on your staff right now?
I think we have about 25 or 26 staff. About half of them are full-time. We are a 24/7 agency, and so we have a number of part-time staff that help us with answering calls as well.
Well, out of that last year, 1,300 calls that you got, how does that break down as to, you know, how many of that 1,300, did follow up with support or whichever on that?
Boy, unfortunately, we don't always know that. If we determine a situation is an imminent risk situation, then we would call 911 and, initiate rescue for that person. By far, though, the majority of our calls are not calls where we end up doing that we can, you know, assess and de-escalate the situation and get the person, you know, to connect in some way. We also offer a follow-up program, so if a person agrees to let us give them a call back, we will check back with them. So then sometimes we know, you know, what steps have been taken, or if they did take some steps and that wasn't helpful, can we help them come up with some other things they can do, again, to try and get them to a better state.
If they're serious about killing themselves, why would they call you?
I think until that moment of death that people have ambivalence, mm-hmm. right, that there's that little part of them, perhaps, that does want to live. And so, for sure, people reaching out and calling us have that, right? That's, you know, a given with the fact that they're reaching out to call us. But I think even people who are not calling, really do have, if they don't even know what that piece is, that, you know, they want to have a desire to live. They want to have that one reason to hang on to life. You know, our life force, I think, is pretty strong. And so, again, it's just finding what you can do to make that connection, to help that person understand that they're not alone, that crises are time limited, right? If we can get them past that time frame, that they, you know, will probably be okay. They'll, you know, get to a spot of feeling better. Again, I think just by having a conversation with them, Janine mentioned that tunnel vision, and I think that is an important piece that, you know, they start to see fewer and fewer options for themselves where, you know, you or I could maybe see that, boy, you know, you could do this or, you know, see some other options that they could try that they just can't find on their own.
Well, you're trained with, you know, the skills that it is a helpline suicide crisis center. If you have to call 911, it's immediate response that you need. The police are trained also. They don't just come barging in like it's a drug bust. I mean, they're trained also to understand suicide also.
Right, and that's been such a nice addition for the Sioux Falls community is the fact that the police officers, there are a number of them that are specially trained now in what's called CIT. Crisis intervention training, and so they have taken some additional training to have skills to help, again, de-escalate people. You know, before if somebody mentioned suicide, their only option was to bring them, you know, immediately to the hospital to get care. And now they have the option of contacting what's called a mobile crisis team. And so that team will go out. And quite often they can, you know, by a face-to-face contact with that person again, they have some special skills to assess and know what connections that they can make to build that safety net for that person. And so they can prevent a hospitalization lots of times.
And suicide by cop does happen. How many automobile accidents, if we really looked into them, possibly are suicides, especially single car rollovers, that type of thing, that we don't even know about?
Right. I mean, there are definitely those deaths that happen that don't get documented as being a suicide death. And so we know about 38,000 people a year die by suicide. And we know that number is somewhat underreported. They say anywhere from 5% to, I've seen numbers even as high as 20% higher numbers of those that, you know, get ruled as an accident when actually they truly are a suicide-related death.
Well, Janine, when you're manning the Helpline Center as a volunteer, and a teenage girl, Nikki's age, probably calls you.
Sure. I don't work on the phones.
Okay.
The work that I do are through some of the support groups, and the walk that is coming up on June 21st.
Yeah, we don't want to forget about that. That's one of the reasons we're doing it this Sunday, is coming up this Saturday. Tell us about the walk.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is our third Step Forward to prevent Suicide Awareness Walk. That's happening at Falls Park. Registration is at 8:30, and the walk begins at 9 a.m. Following the walk, and it's a 1.5-mile walk and a 5K run as well. So if somebody's a runner, they are welcome to come and participate in that 5K. Following the walk and the run, there will be a remembrance ceremony that we do. In particular, that people can, have a little bit of healing and just remembering their loved ones who they have lost to suicide. I think last year we had about 800 people show up, and when you see that many people whose lives have been touched by suicide in some way, boy, it's pretty overwhelming. So I'm hoping we can get some good numbers there again on Saturday the 21st.
Janine, tell us about the support groups. When do they meet and how often? And you've got more than one, I'm sure.
Well, they have a 9-week support group that is once a month?
Yep, we have a monthly support group that happens. And that is, there's no charge with any of our postvention programming. That is facilitated by one of our staff members who is a survivor of suicide loss. And then we do a 9-week education kind of support class that meets for those 9 weeks and focuses on some issues specific to suicide, some of the questions that people have and the emotions that often go along with losing a loved one to suicide. And that's offered at 3 times during the year. We did start a new program this past year, and that is bereavement support groups for children who've lost a friend or a family member to suicide. And so that next group is starting in July as well.
So there's a teen group for Janine. We've got about a minute left. If you were to talk to a teenager out there right now who is thinking of suicide, what would you tell her?
Well, to reach out for help.
Mm-hmm.
To reach out for help, and because there is help out there, and things will get better. I just want to go back to the walk here just for a minute, that on Saturday, June 21st at Falls Park. And there's something when you lose someone to suicide that it just doesn't come up in conversation. It's very healing to be in a place where you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that have gone through what you've gone through. There's a complete understanding, and it's just overpowering. It's very healing, and anyone that is struggling out there that has lost someone to suicide, I would suggest to come out for the walk. It does not cost anything, and you're amongst people who completely understand.
Even if you don't walk, just come on out.
Just come on out. It's very supportive.
Those who have been have the responsibility to help those yet to come. Comes from somewhere, I don't know where. But life as we know it can be very complicated. The brain does many different things, and suicide is something that dealing with it isn't easy. So 211 is a Helpline Center number. In fact, they can call it right now if they want more information. You have a website too, Lori.
Yeah, and that is just Helpline Center, all one word, .org, helplinecenter.org.
And if people want to volunteer to help, you're open for that too.
Absolutely. Give us a call at 211, and we'd love to find a place for you to help out.
Lori Montes, Suicide and Crisis Director at the Helpline Center, 211. And Janine Harris, a volunteer at the Helpline Center, who lost her daughter Nikki to suicide on June 15th of 2005. I want to thank you for coming and giving your authenticity of what it's really like to be a parent survivor.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us on Forum.
Yeah, thanks for having me.